Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Sunday morning. It's just a little bit after 9 a.m. And this is Lizzie and Justin. We are here live for the 132nd week of Turning Towards Life. It is a beautiful Easter weekend, sunny, warm, bright morning here in London. And it's also, as any of you who are with us right now live will know, it's another week where many people in the world are sheltering in place and staying at home so that we can together take care of one another. And of course, the world in lots of ways is changing all around us. There's great suffering and great possibility and all of this going on. And Lizzie, I'm so pleased that we get to do this and that we are continuing to do this right in the midst of this bigness that's happening in the world. And as always, I want to say thank you to everyone who's with us, whether you're with us live this morning or have us in your ears on the podcast or some other way that you found to join us. We are so glad that you're with us.
Hello, everybody. I'm equally as glad that you're here too, and that Justin, you're here, and that I'm here. And yeah, it just feels like we're made for these times in a way. Like we have something to bring in spite of everything that's happening. So I feel grateful for that, walking down the high street and seeing that many endeavors, many passions, many businesses have all been squished at the moment to not operating, and they aren't allowed to offer what they have to offer. So I feel the privilege of still being able to offer what we have to offer, and I'm grateful, and it feels necessary to be in these conversations right now. Absolutely necessary. So somehow I came across this really beautiful poem, and I was convinced that we'd brought it before, Justin. So I went and searched to see if I could find any of it in, because it feels so familiar to me, and I've never read it before. But it came across my path, and I thought, my goodness, we must have done this before. You know, this is a third space thing. Like, this is a Turning Towards Life thing. How could we not have discussed it? So I was convinced. I searched for ages and realized we hadn't. And it feels like a very, in some ways, it's talking about what's possible when we're in this kind of inner and outer work. And it speaks to me of the hopefulness of the work that we are in, and the process that each of us is as a human being as well. And so I feel very hopeful when I read this. And also, it allows the kind of the being frightened and the feeling sorrow and the feeling grief to have its place as well. But it allows us to feel into the beyond that as well. That's why I felt like it was a really important source to bring. So I'm going to read and we can begin. So this is The Unbroken by Roshani Rea. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry, deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut to the heart, as we break open to the place inside, which is unbreakable and whole, while learning to sing.
So I'll read it too. And this is just a reminder before I read it to everyone who's with us, that if you, particularly if you're listening later and you're not in our Facebook group, which you're all very welcome to join, just look for Turning Towards Life on Facebook, we post the texts of these sources on the podcast feed and on our website, turningtowards.life, and you'll find us there when we post, once we're posted there. And this is the Unbroken. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief, which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside, which is unbreakable and whole, while learning to sing.
Thank you. My goodness, just somehow this listening to you, Justin, reminds me of all the ways and all the times I've broken and shattered in my life. And how at the time when it's happened, every time, still every time, I'm convinced this time has got me and I'm done for and there's no hope and there's no way that this could ever be okay, that I could ever be okay. And then something else emerges, which is miraculous given how it felt when it was bad. And in this moment, it has me feel very, very, very joyful that this is possible as a human being, that the, for some reason at the moment, this image of the phoenix rising from the ashes keeps coming to me. I don't really know why, but for some reason, I think it's because there's a little boy called Phoenix in Vesper's little playgroup, and they always say, "Come!" And there's the teachers, the group lady's French, and she goes, "Come on, Phoenix, let's tidy the toys." And every time she says Phoenix, this little kind of image pops up in my mind of, you know, what do I associate with the phoenix? And I feel so hopeful that in humanness, that metaphor, that image has been a necessary one to describe the process of human unfolding. And this describes that for me, which is that it's such a beautiful articulation of the way I have experienced, and I think many people experience, and we can all learn to look in this way too, the human process of breaking and emerging and shattering and finding unshatterableness. And so I just appreciate the rhythm that this points to, the rhythm of it being beyond comprehension how painful this is, and trusting as we move through and time blesses us with its way, that other than pain, other than brokenness, emerges from that which is broken and painful, and how essential and how beautiful and how excellent that is what a human unfolding can bring about in this world for us and the world.
Extraordinarily hopeful piece of writing, without of course turning away from the darkness and the pain in it, and that's one of the things I think makes it so powerful and beautiful. And I noticed in myself, Lizzie, as you were reading, all the parts of me that don't want to feel the side of this that she keeps pointing into. I don't want to feel shattered. I don't want to feel broken. I don't want to feel a sorrow that's so big it's beyond all the grief I can imagine. I don't want to have my heart cut by serrated edges that will break me open. I can really feel my resistance to all of that and ways in which the image I had as you were reading is of, it's a sort of an image that's come to me many times, is of being at the top of a well or something, you know, with a big shaft going down and trying very, very hard to wedge myself in so I won't get sucked down into it. And if I wedge really hard, I'll be okay. And of course, there are a couple of things about that. One is the wedging actually doesn't help. The wedging often is just an extra kind of pain on top of the pain that's already there. And the second thing is the sort of the thing that might seem obvious to say, which is that Roshani is pointing us to, which is that sometimes the only way is through. I was very mindful as you were reading this, Lizzie, of people I know, and I'm sure many of us who are listening, watching this, are being very touched very closely by the pandemic that's going on, and people I know whose loved ones are on ventilators in hospitals and they can't go and see them and they don't know what's going to happen and they only hear once a day how they're doing, about how much of this chatteredness and grief that's bigger than words there is around right now. And it's always been around too. It's around in a different form and in a wider scale in some ways. And so whenever a poem like this comes along, what I find myself wanting to feel into is to feel whether the hopefulness feels like a real hopefulness or not, because it's so easy to take up a sort of really unhelpful, well, it'll be all right in the end, you'll get through this. And when we're in the darkest of the dark places, in a way, I think we don't want somebody to say, on the other side, it will be like this. That feels like an unkindness. And that's why, partly in Roshani's words, the strength and the hardness of the pain that's in here is so important, because it really recognizes how painful it can be to be a human. But I do also think it's the case that very often when we look back, we find that something got born in the hardest times. And as you were reading, I was thinking, well, instead of this being like a prophecy, because sometimes we stay in the dark for a really long time and it doesn't ever feel like for us, it's what Roshani is writing about is going to come about. And for some of us, sometimes it doesn't. You know, for some of us in our own lives, that's where we find ourselves. I feel so hopeful about the bigger thing that she's pointing to, which is that to be a human is always to be open to a possibility that has yet to be born. Like, it's something about what being a human is that we're oriented towards something that could yet be, and that we're not only what's present now. And it's so important for us to remember that what's present now is an inevitable part of the path of being a human. And it's also an inevitable part of the path of being a human that future possibilities open. And without that, of course, when we're in the midst of tragedy or difficulty, we would stay there forever, all of us. But that's not what happens, mostly. Mostly what happens is if we look beyond our own individual lives and our own individual experience, we see so many places in which what happens is that we learn to sing out of the grief, and strength emerges from the depths, and we find... There's this line about wholeness that I've just lost. in looking at this, we find that out of our brokenness, we're in contact with parts of ourselves and parts of life that we hadn't yet been in contact with. But that's an incredibly hopeful thing about humans, that we can do this. And I suppose where this leads me to, as a sort of a pausing for now, is that maybe what this calls us into is also our responsibility to attend to this, that it's not to be participants in the process, to not just assume that it won't or it will happen this way, but that we are involved, we're implicated in being those who can attend to the strength that emerges from the depths and the song that emerges from the heartbreak.
Yeah. And just as you were talking, Justin, I was just feeling this thing of like, thank God for language, that it can point us to a way that we might not ordinarily be able to see or feel or imagine for ourselves. Like Roshani's put a language to a way of practicing, if you like. So if we are in a situation where something feels like it's not moving, maybe it's because we're doing the thing that you said, which is I've got my hands on the well and my feet on the well and I'm holding myself from falling down because I haven't got any faith that this is true. And therefore I can't let go of the walls because I can't fall. I can't let go to allow this to unfold because I don't know that this is what's possible. And so if I might take this poem as an invitation to faith of unfolding, it could be the difference of staying in something for a really, really long time, or letting that be part of multiple elements of a process that has this kind of undulating, pulsing, rhythmic, unfolding nature to it. And so this poem is a change in narrative about what's going on, in a way. It's an invitation to seeing, as you so beautifully put it, I love that image of the well, to seeing that I'm in the well and I'm pushing against the wall so that I don't experience whatever's down there, which I can't see, and my back's to it because I'm not probably holding myself up that way. I'm probably holding myself up that way. I'm not looking at it. And to drop feels so scary. And it's bringing back, I remember I was in India a long time ago and I was in a meditation, and this particular meditation has a very still, long something. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, if I let go, I will die. Like I can't do that. And I didn't do that. I thought, I can't go there. There was something about the fact that I knew I would fall and I knew I would be obliterated. And it was a very internal process. It was not in any physical danger. I could feel the internal process of this meditation. And I remember opening my eyes and saying, no, I'm not doing that. But that experience has stuck with me so strongly as an option. I could keep doing that. I could have kept doing that. I'm just getting to the point where I could feel and then coming straight back off it again. And it's not only feeling, it was like really genuinely letting go of structures that felt like they were holding me up. Even though those structures weren't serving me, I knew there was an opportunity and I would shy away from it. And then gradually as things go along, and I still do that now, obviously, like I still go, well, I'm not going to go there. That's too scary, or it feels too huge or whatever. But I'm learning and learning and learning, which is why I love the end line of this. You know, while we're learning to sing, it's a cry while we're learning to sing. And all the while I'm learning, I practice with the letting go, and then I give myself some evidence that I'm not going to be obliterated. if I let myself feel, if I let myself experience that which is terrifying or frightening. And that's, I think, why this makes me feel so hopeful, these words, because every time I've had the faith to move through, as you said, like the only way is through, always something different comes, which I couldn't have imagined. Like, I couldn't have imagined it to be that way. So it absolutely takes faith, because it's not available yet. Like you were saying, like parts of life aren't available when certain of our personality structures are held so tightly in place. And then when they shatter or they break, or there's some deep kind of grief that arrives, beyond it is a different life. Almost. I mean, it sometimes feels that different. And that difference is also proportionate to the kind of letting go that's necessary. So what can be born is linked to the ferociousness of what needs to happen in the letting go. And it's a really hard thing to do. And I feel like as you're reading, I was thinking, my God, you know, thank God I've also had the people to stand there with me and kind of hold on to my ankles, if you like, while I'm dangling, so that I knew I was still connected. Because I think that's what was really frightening for me back when I had that experience in India, was I didn't feel connected to anyone. When I was going to let go, I couldn't, because I didn't feel tethered to the earth. To connection to human beings. And I feel like us doing this in conversation, being together in this way, having the opportunity for me to bring my shatteredness, to bring my brokenness into a human relationship that can hold it and be with it and know that this is the process and have faith in that on my behalf when I've lost sight, is such an important gift. And if anything that's happening right now is being gifted to us, it's that all of these connections with one another inevitably are deepening, because we're in this huge process as a world. And I feel like we need each other. And that's what's being made clear to us at the moment, is that we need one another. And I experienced that with every, you know, I did an online yoga class the other day and the family Zoom the other day and FaceTiming with my niece. And it's like each one of those kind of breathes some kind of life back into this, what can feel very untethered weirdness. And we can do this for each other mutually. And what a gift.
I was of a similar mind to you, Lizzie, that that this is really helped by being in it with others, and that you used the word faith before, which we've often talked about. And I was thinking about a sort of little slant on it, which is faithfulness, which is something like the ongoing practice of having faith in our individual and collective possibility of opening in the way that Roshani points to, and that there are practices of faithfulness that really help us. So, for example, when we find ourselves in the deepest, darkest part of this side of this, there's no doubt in my mind that having other people that we can talk to who will just listen to us, who will bear witness to the pain that we're in and the sorrow that we're in, and will have us know that we're held, is an enormous part of what enables us to remain faithful to our possibility. And there are no end of other practices of faithfulness. In fact, the one that was coming to me, one of the ones that I really love that comes from the Jewish tradition, is that when we're grieving, after the first few days after a loss, the practice that everyone turns to is saying a prayer, which is really only an appreciation of the beauty and value of life. And this seems like the oddest thing to do in the midst of grieving when somebody has died, but it's not at all odd, because what it allows people to do is to hold the reality of the loss and the pain and the appreciation that life is still here. And that's, I think, is what's also in this poem, is that both are present, and it's our deepest human capacity over time is to have both be here. I'm heartbroken, but I'm not only heartbroken, I'm also here.
Yeah.
And that's why we really need each other, because there are times when all we feel is the heartbreak. And then it really helps for us to have others around with whom we can feel all the other possibilities are present, not in the way that I should feel any different to how I am now, but because you're here, Lizzie, I can feel something else is present, and that way we remember. And we have to not fall into the trap of, I think, of pushing one another into the sort of the other side of Roshani's poem, saying, well, you should be, I demand that you now be unshatterable, I demand that you now be joyful. That's, of course, is not helpful at all. But standing for, and then knowing that other people stand for the other end of this pole, of the polarity, so that over time we can hold both ends. It seems to me as both, it's a giant human possibility. It's what makes it possible for us to recover from pain and difficulty, but it's what makes it possible for us to live in a much wider way after something very difficult has happened for us individually or collectively. And there are so many stories, they're not hard to find, of where we collectively have emerged from some great difficulty and there's been a great flourishing of care and compassion and creativity and responsiveness to the situation world. It's woken us up to, oh, we're way more vast than we knew. Anyway, that we need one another for this, I think, is the part that's most present for me.
It's so lovely, Justin. It's just like this points to a beautiful story of what we might be as people. And that, as you say, it's not that I would be someone who just waits for the bad stuff to go or something, but that I can be for you and you can be for me the presence that can be with the shattered, and the presence who knows that the unshatterable is also present while that's here, and it might not be in your awareness or your encountering of that yet, but by my holding it, there's a chance that you also can hold it and will hold it in a way. And vice versa. And also that there's a way that I also don't want to be a demand for the brokenness as well. Like to say, oh, well, you must have something wrong with you. There must be something. It is just as an attack of, as like, no, you have to be fine. It's like, it's different than having a demand on either end. It's like trusting that the undulation of humanness is what we are. This is what we are. This is the nature of being human. And to hold that third space of witnessing the way that we enter into these two different realms. I mean, there's, you know, thousands of them, but if we're just using the kind of the rhythm of what I feel in this poem, to be that space out of which we can witness and feel and see for ourselves and others that this is what happens, and that I can over time as well, like time seems important in this too, because so much can happen over time. And as you say, when we get so fixated on only what's here, our relationship to time kind of shrinks almost, and we can't see that this is over a lifetime or over a few years or whatever the rhythm might be.
And if I could be for you someone who is present to the shatteredness and your unshatterableness simultaneously, that you might then just be free to express whatever it is you are right now, and I could have enough spaciousness, enough openness, enough undefendedness to be present to whatever is unfolding in you as a person. And I can imagine in my mind now, it's like, that might be easier for me to do for you than it might be to do for me. So you might have to do it for quite a lot for me too. And maybe I could do it for myself sometimes. But to have you here, to have others here to whom I could bring the most shameful, unmentionable, most broken, most awful, dark, forsaken place in me. And you can hold the compassion to be with me for as long as I need, but also know that what I'm saying is part of things, not the whole of things. And implicit, I would feel that from you. That feels like a really beautiful way of being a person in the world.
You just said, I think in a very complete and clear way, Lizzie, something that's pointed to at the very end of the poem, which is, I think that what it sounds to me like you're saying is that when we can find what's unbreakable and whole in us and in others, right, when we're in the midst of difficulties, we've got a much better chance of being able to unfold into the difficulty. Like my being able to feel that part of you that is in deep suffering, and also to remember the part of me that is unbreakable and whole, and that of you that is unbreakable and whole, and not demand anything apart from be spacious enough to have that be present. So whatever's going to happen is going to happen. That seems to me is the path here. Mm-hmm. And it's why we need one another. It's why it's so hard to do on our own. I'm really with you. I think we forget it's hard to remember for ourselves, but we can create practices, community, relationships in which that's what we do for one another. And then there's the possibility of the path through that Roshani is writing about.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's very gorgeous to be in this conversation. I feel, as usual at about this time on a Sunday, like hopeful and willing, very willing to be me and to be following this path and to be in these conversations and to keep trying all this out every day. So thank you, Justin, for your
lovely way of speaking as well. Lizzie, to be willing to be you. I'm so glad. And I am willing to be me. And maybe some of many people who are joining us will find themselves willing to be them. We could do with all of that.
Yeah. So folks, we will see you next week on Sunday with The Source Pool by Justin. And happy Sunday to everybody.
I'll see you then. Bye. Bye-bye.